Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Clone Wars Report. I was hoping that the noise that would bring us into the Clone Wars Report today would indeed be the hooting, as the captions say, of the Trandoshan hunters.
Is that say, oh, hooting? I got to tell you, I'm kidnapped like everybody. Hello, I'm bad at Trandoshan sounds. I got to tell you, Joseph, I'm going to dive in deep. That now is one of my favorite Star Wars sounds.
It's an amazing, amazing sound. By the way, I'm Joseph Grimshaw. Anyway, we're killing it at the intro today. We're just too excited. The visual, too, of the Trandoshans. Mm. Like, look, we are hunters. We are stalking the night. We're big and tall and imposing. But, hey, if we need to call for help, we got to go down on all fours.
Yeah.
And we got to honk like an evil goose lizard.
It really is. It's a lot of things. And it's so wonderfully different from just any of their regular basic dialogue, you know, when they speak in basic and everything, or just even Trandoshan. I just love it. It just stood out every time.
Now every time I watch Empire Strikes Back, I'm going to imagine Boss getting nervous and calling for help and just suddenly like Piet staring up at him and like, what the hell is he doing? Why is he on his knees screaming?
Lizards, we don't need their scum.
Anyway, we are very excited to be discussing this arc in the Clone Wars. We have got to the end of Season 3. It is two episodes we'll be discussing today. Season 3, Episode 21, Padawan Lost, written by Bonnie Mark and directed by Dave Filoni. Season 3, Episode 22, Wookiee Hunt, written by Bonnie Mark and once again directed by Dave Filoni. This is pretty great that obviously Filoni is creatively involved in the entire series, but this is one where he's stepping in and going, I'm directing this one, which I think is really cool. Made for some extra insightful behind-the-scenes videos.
Yes.
And I think it's kind of telling with the stories that are being advanced in these episodes, I think.
Yeah, no, great point. Yeah, and yeah, we always dive into the featurette, some great stuff in there, and sometimes it's just a clean, almost clean-shaven Dave just kind of being snarky and having Dave fun, but I loved his kind of going into the backgrounds of this episode and wanting to have this lush, humid jungle-like setting, and it was pretty fascinating, and I absolutely really respect his takes and what he does in Star Wars. Sometimes I have a little fun with the cult of Dave, but I love kind of seeing his thoughts on the inner workings of that kind of stuff beyond just the big themes.
Yeah, yeah, and that one featurette being just about the progress needed on the technological side to get that extra layer of depth on the Trandoshan moon, Waska, to make it really feel lived in and humid and in the middle of everything and make the audience feel it. That was really, really cool to hear the journey that the creators go on, not just what the big ideas are, but just, you know, technologically, yeah. You know, where are we at as the Clone Wars obviously progresses to the amazing state of technology that we've got for Bad Batch. It's really cool to see the milepost along the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a lot of fun.
All right, well, let's dive in. We got a summary, and then we're going to dive into our overall thoughts on this arc. Here's the summary, Ken. Tragedy on Felucia. While attacking a separatist outpost with Anakin Skywalker and Plo Koon, Jedi Padawan Ahsoka Tano is kidnapped by Lo Terran, a Trandoshan hunter. Anakin is devastated and only reluctantly gives up the search for his missing Padawan. Ahsoka is brought to Waska, the forest moon of Trandosha. There she's released on an island to be hunted by the Trandoshans led by the vile Garnak. Ahsoka teams up with a group of Jedi younglings who have been trapped on the island for a very long time. The younglings encourage Ahsoka to hide with them, but she spurs them on to action. Together, Ahsoka and the younglings find the Trandoshan base, only to discover it is a ship, a floating hunting lodge in the sky. The Trandoshans give chase, and after a daring battle, Garnak's son Dar is defeated and killed by Ahsoka, but Khalifa, the former leader of the younglings, is also shot dead. Sad. Ahsoka escapes and, despite her trauma, rallies the remaining younglings. They intercept the Trandoshan prison ship and free the sole prisoner, the mighty Wookiee Chewbacca. Using salvage tech from the now-crashed ship, Chewie builds a transmitter to call his home planet of Kashyyyk for help. Meanwhile, the Jedi younglings kidnap the Trandoshan Smug and use a Jedi mind trick to get Smug to bring them to the Flying Fortress. Our heroes launch a valiant assault, but they are outnumbered and moments from death. When the Wookiees, led by Tarful, arrive, answering Chewbacca's call, much roaring, growling, and throwing ensues. Ahsoka chases down Garnak in his throne room. She defeats the raging hunter and demands he stand down. But Garnak, desperate for revenge for the death of his son, reaches for his blaster, and Ahsoka force pushes him over the ledge to his doom. Returning to Coruscant, Anakin is relieved, but blames himself for allowing Ahsoka to be kidnapped at all. Ahsoka tells Anakin it is because of his training and inspiration that she survived the ordeal. Master and Padawan are happy for now. Bum, bum, bum. There we go, Ken. That's the summary. Let's dive into the big overall reactions here. Did you love this episode? Like it? Struggle with it?
All of them. To explain, no, here's the journey. We've been talking about this. The second half of season three. Season three overall is just a great season of Clone Wars. We're doing the chronological rewatch, which means we might pull from other seasons, yes. But overall, season three, just big arcs and big things. And so I can't help, even when I sat down to watch this, and here in 2021, I was transported a little back in time to what, 10 years ago with these. I do enjoy these episodes, and there's big lessons, and they're a different set of episodes. But when you hold them up against Night Sisters, Citadel, Mortis, you're like, oh, it's okay. It's a dangerous game theme and, you know, homage, and we get some stuff here. Well, I don't know. It just feels less epic, right? And I think that's just what it is. But I really asked myself this question between viewings this week, Joseph. I said, why were these two episodes the season three finale?
Yeah.
With Floney Drive. Like, what's going on? And that can be open to interpretation. You and I always say it's just us giving our kind of interpretations of things. Take any of it as you will. It really struck me from my point of view that these episodes are very much about Ahsoka, but very much about the Jedi at the time, at this time in the war, the good and the bad and where they're heading and the pitfalls ahead. This was very much about the Jedi with crushed hope, Jedi overwhelmed by their situation and how training and the cores of the Jedi code and just who they are or just who Ahsoka is represents. We always say Ahsoka kind of represents the Jedi as maybe they could be, and not saying Ahsoka is this deity and an angel and always perfect, but just she ends up kind of sitting in a real good spot on how to be a Jedi, I think. And so to use her as that, and you had talked about some of the previous episodes checking in on Ahsoka on her journey, right? And,
yeah.
And I just felt a lot of that through these episodes the second time around, and therefore that like to struggle as to why these are here became a real love of what was going on.
Oh, that's awesome. That is a great journey to go on. Yeah, I think I really love this arc. And it fascinating that it falls at the end of season three here, or doesn't fall. It was placed gently, yes. Lovingly, creatively. Yeah, but you're right. Like Night Sisters, Mortis, these are kind of big, epic. Wow, Tarkin, Citadel. This is a shorter arc of two episodes. It's a little bit more intimate. But that, I think, really does disguise the huge importance to just the overall story of the Clone Wars animated series. Yeah. I think, for me, season three is really where Clone Wars becomes the Clone Wars. There are a ton of episodes I love in the first season and the second season. It's not even a dig on them, but it's like really where it just kind of comes to life and exploring all these ideas and just being really experimental of like, yeah, there's no fear. There's no... you know, should we do this? There's just like, let's try everywhere. So there's just that general mood to it. But I think the fact that it's a little bit smaller and a little bit more intimate, it really puts the Ahsoka under a microscope. And through Ahsoka, as you're saying, the Jedi and Anakin in particular. Like, mm-hmm. I think really the reason that it's there at the end of season three, and in particular those final shots, is the Clone Wars kind of grows to be this anthology series that follows a lot of different characters and a lot of different ideas. But I think the spine of it is Ahsoka's growth and this test that Yoda lays out verbally, clearly in the movie, that it will be really good for Anakin to have an apprentice, and that Yoda doesn't seem too concerned that Anakin will be a good teacher. Or that Ahsoka will become a good Jedi. The real test is he going to be able to let go of someone he comes to care about? And that this is what this is about, right? We check in on with Anakin a little bit. He doesn't get a bunch of screen time, but every bit of screen time with Anakin is about that, is about, can he let go of Ahsoka, or is she going to be detrimental to him, or is he going to learn from this process? And yeah, everything about Ahsoka is she is facing these big questions that we'll get into about has she adopted some of the flaws of Anakin or the strengths, and what are her actual internal strengths all by herself, you know, away from Anakin? And what a great way to test her, right? To just say, if we're following this young Jedi's journey all by herself, and also what it means for the Jedi when we have this younger person with a slightly a clearer vision while the rest of the Jedi are maybe making bad choices. What a great way to test her by isolating her. Right.
In terms of just the writing of it. I love that. And that's how, again, when you start, I think Star Wars just rewards you when you really just, you don't need a big shovel, Joseph. You don't need a backhoe or a construction. You just need a little gardening shovel to dig and see what's there. And I'm so excited sometimes when that stuff emerges. You can feel the excitement in my voice. And I think you're so right. Just the vibe right from the beginning. There's just some banter at the beginning that just sets the tone for Ahsoka saying, hey, you taught me well.
Yep. Yeah. It's about Ahsoka's growth in Anakin's attachment. And it's a great place to leave season three. And then there's like the surface level sounds more dismissive, because the surface level adds to, you know, the flavor and all that. But I also just really enjoy these episodes from the more just straightforward narrative, what is going on. I remember watching them, and at this point I was getting so excited, and I was being irresponsible with the amount I was binging Clone Wars.
Yeah.
So I was watching it on Netflix in 2014 because I'd seen the Night Sisters arc with Savage Opress and the fractured image of Maul, and I was like, oh well, he'll probably pop up next episode, right? So I sped watched all of these, and I remember feeling just gutted, just viscerally upset for Anakin, and like afraid for Ahsoka and pissed off for Ahsoka. I remember these episodes really, really getting me just on the absolute basic emotional, what is the narrative? What is happening to the character? So that was really great to revisit that and remember like how deeply I was like, this is not okay. And then also just for me, a couple other big picture things I want to mention right at the top is, you know, the visuals are great. With the new technology on the moon does make all of it just feel kind of like alive and hot, and both you're immersed in nature and it's kind of beautiful, but it's also scary as hell. Yeah. So the visuals are great. Because of the nature of this, it's a very different action. It's always great when we see, you know, Jedi deflecting blasts and blowing up Separatist ships and droids. But this, because it's Trandoshans, because it's Jedi without their lightsabers, all the action has is kind of different and surprising quality where they get into it and like, well, how are they going to get out of this one, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Even to the, you know, it's so funny because it's been a few years, like you, since I've probably watched them. And so I had this reaction of just steal their blasters. Just steal their, oh, that's right. They don't even
doesn't work.
Doesn't work.
Yeah.
And it is about beyond just smashing that X button. You're right. About finding the hope to smash that X button, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for me also just I've always been a big Bosk fan since I was a little kid. So I was excited to see the Trandoshans. I honestly can't remember where I picked up the lore that was there in Legends that the Trandoshans and the Wookiees had beef.
Right.
I can't remember. Maybe I read that the trilogy of the Bounty Hunter Wars from Legends back in the day. Maybe it was there. I don't remember where I personally picked it up. But I remember thinking like, well, this is great because I've always kind of just known about this somehow magically.
Yeah.
And it was great to see a little bit of Trandoshan and Wookiee conflict on screen.
It's the Harlem Globetrotters and Washington Generals of the Star Wars world.
Exactly. Yes. The tall, powerful guys. They got to fight. They got to fight. All right. Let's talk about the morals of the episode. Two episodes. We've got two morals. The first episode gives us this little life lesson. Without humility, courage is a dangerous game. And the second one is a great student is what the teacher hopes to be. Do either of those speak to you or remind you of times where you coached Little League?
You know, it's funny. I saw that moral. I was like, oh, yeah, my weekly Clone Wars coaching update has been a while. You know what? I can't on the great student is what a teacher hopes to be. There's some fascinating stuff that we can discuss. And so that one didn't connect with me as much as without humility, courage is a dangerous game. Number one, great reference to kind of the some of the source material we're oding here in this episode. But I really just this idea of the concept of courage. We even just were talking about in the Lego terrifying tales of fear and how without fear, there's no courage and these big kind of bumper sticker kind of philosophies. But I really looked at it about what does it mean to be humble as you are courageous? And it took to this, I went to the path of this, it could lead to this empathy, but also self-awareness and knowing that you're there to serve others first, that to me, again, to me, Ahsoka isn't just plain hero here, not Jedi hero. She knows the fear of the situation, but is rising to the challenge for herself and those around her. True leader, true courage, coming from this point of serving first versus let's go kill him. Let's go. I don't care where you're at emotionally with us. We got to do it. Ain't that brave? And then you all end up dead. I don't know. There's just something that, in that direction that I connected with.
Yeah, I think this is all really great, including the Dangerous Game shout out, which, yeah, the Star Wars pulls from all sorts of genres, and they're having so much fun in the Clone Wars, everything from, you know, witches to kaiju to really playing with different genres and putting them in a Star Wars interpretation. Most Dangerous Game, looking it up on old Google, a story published in Collier's Magazine, January 19th, 1924, many different film and radio adaptations. About being hunted. Fun. But I think the without humility, courage part of this is just it's such a great, just kind of straightforward Jedi teaching of like being centered on why you are doing a thing and making the thing, being confident, right? Because you need to be. Do or do not, there is no try. But also just making it not about yourself, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that, you know, gets framed with Ahsoka and Anakin of it's great to be confident. It's great to use your skills. But sometimes is this slipping into being about your ego? Is this sometimes, you know, Plo Koon says being fearless can also be a weakness.
Yeah.
If you just think I am the best, no problem. I'll just go out there and I'll kick ass. And I think what Ahsoka is going through is she isn't doing that. She's having some humility and going, OK, this isn't just about me. It's about other people.
Yeah, yeah, and to dive in a little bit of just the fear thing and how, you know, I don't know. I always talk about this misinterpretation. I think of just that Yoda line from Phantom Menace of what fear leads to. I bring it up a lot because I think it's I've seen evidence in my own life and even some people close to me of like not understand, you know, being. Little Anakin is not afraid of standing in front of the Jedi Council. He has no fear. He has fear of losing his mother, which was the more dangerous fear. And I think that's why I talk about self-awareness and this humility and that Ahsoka is brave, but she understands and she understands those around her, where I think Anakin might've just been a Gundark in a China shop here, just trying to save the day, which could have led to more problems. That's really how I love what Plo Koon was saying about, not having fear is sometimes bad.
Maybe means you have no concern for the others around you. Yeah.
Clearly, you know, I'm drawn from my own life here, but I kept going back to that scene with Plo Koon.
Yeah. Yeah. A lack of fear could maybe be apathy or ego or lots of things. Yeah. I really like the great student is what the teacher hopes to be as well, because that obviously centers things on Anakin a little bit. And also, you know, that kind of circle of Ahsoka sort of becoming the master of these other younglings and, you know, her learning from them as well, all that. And it's an idea that then really gets restated in a different way by Yoda in The Last Jedi. So it's always fun to see some of these ideas in Star Wars crop up and be phrased in different ways that maybe have different interpretations or implications, but are clearly related, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, we've been talking already about some of the big ideas in these episodes because it's hard to stay away from them. Yes. They're so exciting, but let's dive all the way in. What for you were some of the big themes or just ideas at stake in these episodes?
A lot there. When you and I are talking about themes in the Clone Wars, it's like when you mix your green beans with your mashed potatoes and turkey on Thanksgiving. It's all one wonderful plate to eat. So here's where I went in all three episodes. I wrote down these kind of topic sentences and what ideas are at stake to me. Also, what's at stake could just very well be your life, your existence.
Yes.
The first
not one, dying is at stake.
Not dying, staying alive while you're being hunted by Trandoshans. A loss of hope and how to regain your purpose is really particularly what I loved about the first episode. It kind of affected me to find these three Jedi, young Jedis, younglings, maybe not even, if I recall, didn't even have the chance to be Padawans. Did I maybe miss?
I believe they call themselves younglings.
Younglings, right. And how they were just kind of left. And, you know, I have some questions about, you know, is that the name of the game? This is big theme here for the show. But, like, I almost wouldn't mind Anakin giving a little search for Ahsoka. Like, Joseph, if I go missing at Star Wars Celebration, it's okay to go look for me for a little bit.
No, I need to let go.
I've trained him as a podcaster. He'll be back. So I felt bad. All that to say, I stumbled to my point. I feel real bad for these three younglings. Real bad. And the other ones that have come before. And I get their loss of hope and how hard it is at that point to regain your purpose when you're so far away from what you thought, where you should be, or just being overwhelmed by the situation, where I think the Jedi are slowly but surely being overwhelmed by their own situation, and how to refind your hope. It is a balance of confidence in your own abilities while also maintaining awareness and care, not going into the cocky, which could cause you more to lose your footing even more. Anyways, all that to say, that really, when you're down and out, how do you get back up is big for me.
Yeah. I really agree with that. I think there's these kind of these ideas from the Anakin side of it and these ideas from the Ahsoka side of it. That is, they're definitely hope versus fear. Big Star Wars ideas kind of explicitly stated in these episodes of the younglings having understandable fear and losing all hope to push back against that fear. Yeah. But there's also a little bit to what you're saying about Anakin, of this sort of constant Jedi discussion in Star Wars of when to act versus when to wait, when to be patient, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, you really feel for these younglings. You really feel for Ahsoka. I super felt for her the very first time I watched these episodes, like I was saying. I kind of interpret it as, you know, Anakin is determined to go after Ahsoka rather than accept that he needs to wait because, you know, Rex does, you know, these multiple sweeps. You know, we, the audience, know she's gone and know that they don't have any clues as to where she went. The Trandoshans, you know, covered their tracks, probably literally. And we got that scene where Anakin like yells at Rex, which he doesn't do, right? Like Rex cares about her too. And he's like, I checked three times. We can't find anything. He's like, not good enough. Go again. Right.
Yeah.
So it isn't that he doesn't look, and this is a little bit of headcanon for me, but when Plo Koon's like, yeah, but we got to go, I kind of feel like there's this is the Jedi way, that we have other things to do. We're in the middle of a war, you know?
I actually really agree with you on that moment. It's you know, you're choosing what dialogue to put on screen. It was very, this is Plo Koon. This is Lil Soka's guy. Like, you know, he has a lot of love, care, and concern for her. For him to just be like, there's a bigger thing at stake and you're going to have to let this go. It's just a great parable for all of us at one point in our lives, I guess.
Yeah. And I think what, you know, these are those plot points where the Jedi always risk coming across cold, right?
Yes.
But I think that's why those details are important. Is he does look, and Plo Koon isn't saying just accept she's dead. Yeah. And that is a Jedi philosophy. If they knew she was dead, they would say just accept that. But I think that's why it's kind of this when to act versus when to wait, because what Plo Koon is trying to say to Anakin of is, you have responsibilities. You need to let this go now and not be ruled by your fear. And you need to have some hope, Anakin, and sit with your hope and wait, right? Plo Koon's actual quote is, if you have trained her well, she shall take care of herself and find a way back to you. You know, that isn't just cold. That is having hope and confidence in the next generation, which is this whole Jedi system, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think you're right there. It's a fine point. It's right there. And I agree. And again, this is what fear could lead to. Anakin is not a, you know, he's not a fearful guy with the big enemies in front of him. And that's always been established. But this is those little micro fears that I think, you could just mess up that China shop a little bit better. All the antique dishes all smashed all on the ground if you're not careful.
Yeah, exactly. So that, I feel like that's going on with Anakin. It's hope, it's fear, it's when to act, when to wait. And then, of course, that's just explicitly what's going on with the younglings, that they're doing nothing but waiting, right? I think Khalifa says, we're not saviors here, we're survivors. And convinces Ahsoka for a little while to do nothing, right? It's really affecting when Ahsoka's like, well, of course we should save these other people that were kidnapped with me, and just watches them get shot down without taking action. Like that's huge and painful for, you know, spring into action Ahsoka. And I really like this quote from Khalifa also kind of justifying that, look, we've been on this moon for a while. We know how to survive. And she says to her, Khalifa says to Ahsoka, if you really are a Padawan, you would know there's wisdom in experience, which really stuck with me because it is a callback to Rex and Ahsoka's like first conversation in the Clone Wars movie where Rex makes the argument that wisdom, you know, outranks everything. So you see that Ahsoka is like, okay, I appreciate that wisdom. I will try to listen and learn. And then you know, I would say that's like some of the humility, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when she sees like, oh no, you younglings have just, you've lost all of your hope.
Yeah.
Which is understandable, but not acceptable.
Yeah.
You know, so then, you know, all of Ahsoka's dialogue is just like, it's another good like brochure on how to be a Jedi, right? We have to act. We were beginning to lose hope and forgot who we are, Khalifa says. And who are you? Ahsoka answers. And Khalifa says, we are Jedi. Yeah. And for me, that's really like, it gets back to like Jedi as symbols. Like, obviously, their power makes a difference. They can make a difference with their physical power. But Jedi are supposed to be symbols of light and hope. And if a Jedi gives up light and hope, you know, they're not a Jedi anymore.
Yeah.
So I really thought the crystal clear, they have given in to fear. They are doing nothing because their experience has taught them it's really scary to do anything.
Yeah.
And Ahsoka spurs them back to hope.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Wonderfully stated. You have kind of this one side of the coin kind of thing going on here with Anakin too much ready to charge ahead and then the absolute loss of hope. And there again, Ahsoka representing, you know, and I don't mean to put this pressure on Ahsoka as the poster child for all of the Jedi over thousands of years. I really love the lessons. It's very clear the lessons she learns and what she applies mean a lot for the Jedi Order, at least from my point of view there.
Yeah, and I think that for me, that is the story of Ahsoka, is that she isn't like this absolute amazing best Jedi ever. It's not a drop-down menu power thing, most powerful ever, most smart ever. It's in this era where the Jedi are slipping and not following some of their own teaching. And Ahsoka keeps going like, but wait,
yeah,
the stuff you taught me makes sense. So I'm going to actually do that instead of so many of you who are slipping from it.
Yeah, a part of it in the second episode, I apologize, I think up top of this conversation, I might have accidentally said three episodes. There's a lot of Clone Wars episodes. And the second one, just, I wrote down this idea of retaining yourself through suffering and adversity, which is hard and which is part of what we see going on here. And that's why I really started to apply it to the bigger picture, which we'll talk about, of the Jedi overall. And I love what you said there of her just kind of going, hey, it's in the training, not even the books. It's in the training. It's in who we are. That's the answer. And we're in this tough era. Cause I also noted like this episode starts with some of the most clear generaling by the Jedi's. Plo Koon going here, there, we're in this war. Let's do it. We're leading it. I mean, they're generals and commanders. So to see that episode start this way, but her just kind of finding her way through that and a lot of suffering, a lot of adversity, a lot of questions, a lot of confusing times. And how do you retain who you are through that?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, what makes this idea powerful in these episodes is the younglings. It's totally understandable that Khalifa's line of there's wisdom and experience. That one just like kind of haunted me. Cause like there's some stuff that I have to do that like, it stresses me to do because I have the wisdom to know all the different ways it could go wrong.
Right.
So it makes me want to not try it. Whereas when I was younger, like I would just rush in because I didn't know that could blow up in your face these seven different ways. And this, like this episode was inspiring to go like, yeah, don't be like the younglings. You got to find a way forward, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey. Yeah. I know what you mean. I'm going to tweet about Game of Thrones on Twitter. That seems like a great idea. 5 years later. Oh, I know what that can do.
But does that mean you should stop? Because maybe Twitter needs your light, your hope, Ken.
We hope.
So moving on then from that big theme to what you were just speaking to, I think there is this great arc through these episodes about vengeance versus justice, which is once again about, you know, just Jedi kind of finding their footing. I think that was really idea was really benefited by this great atmosphere that the team managed to create of this kind of hot, sticky jungle. It's just it's feral. It feels like a killer be killed, laws of the wild, you know, not any tech in sight kind of stuff. And then, of course, it just gets played out directly where once Ahsoka gets the younglings to actually use their power and have some hope again, the first thing Khalifa does is almost snap Drandoshan's neck with the Force.
Yeah, this is a great theme, Joseph. This is great because, you know, in that moment, I'm like, do it. Do it. Don't retain yourself. Do it. Survive.
Good, good, Khalifa. Kill him.
And there's the point. There's the point. They have to survive. There's some deaths, maybe, but not a lot of it, particularly with Ahsoka at the end, is not intentional, like you said. Vengeance versus justice. That's a big theme.
Yeah. And I love that again, Ahsoka just being the good old Jedi handbook brochure, don't kill him out of hatred. It's not the Jedi way, which is just so important to the way I look at Star Wars and the Jedi philosophy. And we talk about it. I go on about how your actions are important, but actually, you know, why you take those actions matters to the Jedi too. That's their philosophy of like, and we see this in action of like, hey, we've stopped him. He's not a threat to us. You can't just kill him because you are mad. Mm-hmm. But if it's me or him and he won't back down, I'll kill him. Yeah. You know, it's harsh, but it is the Jedi way.
And it's a fine line. It's in real life and Star Wars life, whatever. It's a fine line. And I think it needs to be a fine line. It should be a fine line that you need to ruminate on, study, think, analyze. And that's why I love these type of episodes. It's this big question. I can't wait to you and I discuss Out of the Shadows. We're finally reading that wonderful High Republic book. And there's just some wonderful things of is offensive better for protecting or is it defensive? We just got to wait. Like, what do we do? And it's a fine line.
A fine line. Yeah. And I love that this episode is kind of crisp on it, right? We've mm-hmm. seen Anakin lash out in absolute anger, even in the Clone Wars animated series. And there's that, ooh, Ahsoka picked that up. And she's like, so clear immediately, like, no, don't snap that guy's neck. But then by the time we get to the end of the arc, that second episode, you know, Garnak, the Trandoshan leader, is upset because Dar got himself killed while trying to kill Ahsoka, right? Ahsoka doesn't even do it. He falls and he spears himself on something on the ground, right? So yeah. Ahsoka didn't even actively take his life, but Garnak can't let revenge go. And even after Ahsoka has clearly defeated him, he starts, reaching for the blaster. And Ahsoka says, don't, you know? And she says, your son died because of your own actions, not mine. And those are those moments where Ahsoka is really powerful of like, I'm not like Anakin. I'm not going to force push you because I'm mad that you kidnapped me and put me through hell.
Right.
I am saying you kidnapped me, dude. Yes. You hunted me and now I'm fighting back and I still want to take you alive. Please don't reach for your blaster.
Please don't.
And only after all of those steps of, you know, options does Ahsoka give him the big push.
Love it. And it's, and again, when you pull out that little tiny garden shovel, it's all right there. You don't dig too deep. It's all right there in the dialogue and the action. And I love it because it's an ongoing question for me personally of, if I was Anakin, I might have taken down that Tusken Raider village too. And I'm not proud about that. You know, you have to ask that. That's part of the fun of Star Wars and analyzing Star Wars for me.
Of what is the philosophy of these heroes. And for me, I think this one was really powerful because it was about vengeance versus justice, you know, attack versus defense, and really clearly played out in these building blocks of why Ahsoka feels so centered and like she is finding the Jedi path for herself.
Yeah.
Last big thing for me is this idea of, you know, coming of age and letting go in this sort of cycle of teacher and student, you know. Yeah. I love how many of Anakin's quotes are just sort of like exactly on the nose of his problems, right?
Yeah.
Of Anakin saying, I will not leave her fate up to others, that need to control, that, you know, promise he makes kind of to himself in the garage on the Lars homestead about, you know, he won't let this happen again. You know, he won't let anybody he cares about die, that he can control it all, you know?
Yeah.
Anakin says, I'll find her. And Plo Koon even says, well, this may not be within your power. Yeah. Really trying to get to these core issues of Anakin's inability to let go, right? And say, I have to accept that there's some things I can't control. And that Anakin's like, no, if it's broken, I can fix it. I can even prefix it. I can make it so things never break. And how unhealthy that is.
Yeah, I wrote down that line too, because it's so Anakin going, I have a wrench for everything. I can fix it. And when I can't, it really frustrates me. And I love that. That's all through Anakin's life from the beginning. Yeah. I'm right there with you on this idea. I put down the idea of like listening to those around you, and Ahsoka inspires them, but at the end kind of has to trust them and their plan, right? They're kind of pitching her a plan, and she has maybe some thoughts, and Chewie's there. We haven't even talked about Chewbacca showing up. The theme is Chewbacca is a survivor. He's always captured.
He's always captured and he gets out, right? I think he gives this little burst of hope too, right? Because he comes in, you know, they've suffered this tragedy of losing Khalifa. And you almost wonder if the episode is going to go somewhere where Ahsoka feels like, ooh, I pushed too hard and Khalifa died. And like, no, you got to fight, right?
Yeah.
And then Chewie comes in and is like, you know, throw those Trandoshans around, build a transmitter. What are we waiting for? Let's go. He's this burst of hope to keep him going.
He is. And how, I think it connects to what you're saying here. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah, just, I thought it was a generational shift within this episode for Ahsoka going, hi, we can do it. We can do it. Okay. You got it. Let's do it. I trust that you are in the right place with me and we're going to move forward and we're going to take action, the action that we need to. And now that kind of connected to what was going on with Anakin and what is going on with the Jedi and Anakin overall.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like all of the Clone Wars animated series is a coming of age story for Ahsoka. I feel like these younglings really kind of come of age where they decide for themselves. Like there's the quote, I think, from Omer, Ahsoka, you got us to believe in ourselves again. And well, I believe in Jink's plan. I believe Jink's plan will work. Like they're making plans now. They're taking the reins, right? So they're kind of coming of age. There's also a coming of age thing going on, horrible, dark coming of age thing going on with Garnak. Where Garnak is, it's not just like a random, like, hey, Gar was my best friend. Garnak is encouraging his son to enter the world by doing this rite of passage of viciously hunting other sentient creatures, right? So there's a dark coming of age going on there, and it doesn't work out well for Dar or Garnak.
Look, this is why I really am fascinated by Skeer, the Trandoshan Jedi in High Republic, because I got to be careful. You love Bosk. I love Bosk as well. But man, that's a harsh upbringing.
It is a difficult culture to grow up in.
Yeah, they have some thoughts.
Yeah. Even with the, I was thinking about this of like, there's this cycle of master and student and coming of age, and when do you let go as a master, as the older person. And how much the Trandoshans, what they're doing is the complete opposite of letting go of random people in the galaxy belong to us. They're ours to hunt. And once we have them, we'll actually keep parts of their bodies.
Yes.
The total opposite of letting go.
Yeah. Including some crystal skull aliens.
That's great. And last big point for me is obviously the conclusion of this episode. Where, you know, Ahsoka is still the Padawan. She still has stuff to learn from Anakin. But how much this is the student teaching the master, right? Yeah. Anakin saying, I'm so sorry for letting you go, for letting you get taken. He's literally apologizing for the thing that he needs to learn how to do.
Yeah.
He's so not learning his lesson, right? And then Ahsoka really trying to reassure him with the... when I was out there alone, all I had was your training and the lessons you taught me. And because of you, I did survive. And again, it's basically like Anakin not knowing how to be a mentor or master, not knowing that letting go is a part of the process. And Ahsoka like teaching him how the cycle works. They're like, no, you taught me. You were there with me because you passed all these things on to me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Just pretty plain and powerful, I thought.
Yeah, great stuff. Any other big ideas in this episode before we move on to kind of how they reflect the larger story of Star Wars?
No, I've got the gravy going into the corn at this point. It's all there. So.
Excellent. Well, let's get into the corn then. For me, I really like looking at what do the individual arcs of Clone Wars kind of say about the state of the war. I love that the newsreel opening makes it clear that they are just grinding on Fallujah, right? This isn't a big take it or leave it. It's just a push and pull, a back and forth. Fallujah is important because it's near a hyperspace lane. Again, just kind of really reminding you that they're just fighting over kind of like basic, you know, resources and access to this stuff. It's just a grind at this point.
Yeah.
And for me, what you were talking about earlier in our conversation about like feeling bad for those younglings, this is total headcanon. There's nothing in the episode to suggest this. But for me, I wonder, is this some more fallout of the war that these younglings were out on, you know, in some sort of exploratory mission and they got taken? And would they normally have been looked for much more if it wasn't in the middle of the Jedi being generals in an endless war?
I'll back you on that headcanon. I'll be in that daydream. It makes sense. It maybe just makes you feel a little better about their plight. And by the way, it hurt when Ahsoka's like, oh, great. Where are those other ones? Oh, they're dead. Oh, just for a second. Oh, man. It just sucks because, I think you're right. A little bit there. I think I can go with this idea of just like that is these unintended consequences of being generals at the front of a war. And this is some of the casualties, the ones you don't even see. And maybe they thought they were dead. Maybe that, you know, they don't have the resources. They don't have the time. And I don't, justice for the Jedi, you know, I get it. But it's what's there.
Yeah. Well, I guess it is kind of explicitly there in how Ahsoka herself gets kidnapped, or these Trandoshans, yeah, like, these idiots are fighting on Felucia. Like, if Anakin and Ahsoka were just walking around Felucia together, you know, helping, you know, some people, you know, get water from point A to point B, it would be much harder for the Trandoshans to sneak up and take it. It's the chaos of the war that allows them to take Ahsoka.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. I agree with that a lot.
Cool. So what big picture ideas, morality, perspective of Star Wars are you feeling in these episodes?
I still want to hit this idea, scratch this itch I have of just this, the Jedi overall, and seeing this for them and perhaps, again, the unintended consequences. But we you know, get a lot of stuff in Attack of the Clones of this younger Jedi. And by the way, it's not just the younger Jedi, right? Because we got just this loss of perhaps self a little bit, loss of their true purpose. And when I say loss, it's not like they're arrogantly tossing aside the Jedi codes. It's the treachery, the skills, the Palpatine at his best, just finding these little cracks to put all the Jedi in these morally compromising positions. And it becomes very overwhelming. You talk about this grind at the beginning. It is just yet another battle, and it's yet another struggle, and yet more loss of life for the clones, and in some cases the Jedi. And that could be completely overwhelming. If this is our season three finale of just wanting to analyze that and what's to come with the Jedi and the fall of the Jedi, I go back to that a lot when watching these episodes. Again, full general mode. You take your troops here, I'll go here. We're fighting a war, pew, pew, pew. And what that really means for the Jedi and how it kind of ends up with a loss of hope. And how could the Jedi have retained themselves and retained their identity through all that adversity is what draws me into this episode even deeper.
Yeah, no, and I love how much the Clone Wars invites those discussions and those thoughts. And for me, I think, you know, Palpatine says, you know, that the arrogance is the Jedi's weakness. Yoda says,
yeah,
a lot more Jedi are becoming arrogant. And I think a part of the arrogance is that, well, we're Jedi. We'll end this war quickly. And then we'll find out who's behind it. It's taken a little while, but just patience. And they kind of have this arrogance that they can do it because they're Jedi, right?
Yeah.
I think then they just get locked into it. And, you know, in some ways, I think it's weird to say they're not taking action because they're taking a lot of action. They're in a war, but it's almost more like they're not willing to take a step back and go, we've stepped down this path the wrong way. We are stepping back from leading this war, and we will only aid, you know. But they're trapped. I mean, Palpatine does a great job, too, because then you think about it that way, and they're like, okay, but then how many planets that we've promised that we'll protect will be overrun, you know, will the clones be slaughtered? So he does have them in this great sort of moral quandary. But I think the lesson ultimately would have been, yeah, they would have benefited from stepping back once it was clear it was a grind.
Yeah. I mean, somewhere Qui-Gon's in the Force going, you know, I can't fight a war for you.
Right.
When I said that.
Right? Remember when Mace said it at the beginning of the movie, Attack of the Clones?
Yeah.
So I think it is about that arrogance of like, well, we can bend our rules because it's defense, right? Because the Separatists are attacking us. It's a fallen Jedi in Dooku who's leading it. It's probably this other, you know, Sith that we're still looking for out there. So we'll defend the Republic, and it slipped so far so quickly.
Yeah, and I saw a lot of it in the campfire scenes of them just sitting around and her even at the end, you know, when the hope maybe returns, who are you? We are Jedi. Like, those are kind of those soul-searching questions, and I just saw a lot of that there and how it tied into the big picture, what's going on.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We talked about this a little bit, but I was really affected. Like, this almost had this sort of like a little checklist of checking in on Ahsoka and Anakin in terms of which traits do they share, right? We have an explicit conversation with Plo Koon of like, well, you know, what gives Ahsoka her strength? And, you know, Anakin throws out that she's fearless, that she's determined. And Plo Koon points out that they share those things. And that maybe flawless isn't great. But I think that we do get to see that she's kind of cocky. Even at the very beginning in the Felucia mission, Anakin warns her not to be cocky.
Right, right.
So we see that she is cocky like Anakin. We see that she is fearless, which can be a strength and a weakness. But then once she gets really into it on the moon, we see that she is compassionate. It's even why she gets taken, right? Because she senses something in the woods or the plants, giant flowers, and stays there to guard her clone's back, right? So even that's compassionate.
Yeah.
So we see that she's compassionate like Anakin. We know that. She's proactive, that she is really not content to just kind of sit and wait. She wants to make a difference. And then repeatedly just, she acts in defense and protection. So this encourages us to ask, what are Ahsoka's strengths? What are her weaknesses? Does she share them with Anakin? And for me, watching it the way we are, it's extra powerful coming just a few episodes after she had that vision of her future self on Mortis saying, you share some dangerous traits with your master and you'll never become the Jedi you're meant to be if you don't leave him. Mm. So the fact that her future self vision raised these questions that then, you know, two arcs later, we are wrestling with those questions and kind of answering them.
Yeah, and picking apart what is good and what is bad about the person she's been mentored by. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Final thing for me is I so love the way this ends, the literal actual last scenes. The happiness from Anakin that he didn't lose somebody he loves, the validation from Ahsoka that you are a good teacher and you're doing well by me. Ahsoka being happy with her master and such a beautiful, you know, bittersweet knowing what's coming eventually moment where they bow to each other and, you know, thank you, master, you're welcome. You know, it's so nice. But the button that I love is you got this weird reveal of somebody peeks around the corner and it's Yoda and it's Yoda watching them. And that to me is a direct callback to the Clone Wars movie where Yoda explicitly says to Obi-Wan of like, will giving Anakin a Padawan help him? Will learning to let go of a Padawan help Anakin? And it's like Yoda checking in on the central question of the show.
Yeah. And hear what you're getting into here. And I'm immediately going to some of the big things with Padme and Anakin and Revenge of the Sith and how that ends, like you said, bittersweet indeed, and just maybe bitter of seeing Anakin was able to not put this bad attachment in front of his actions. And look what happens, you know, she returns, Ahsoka returns, the relationship goes on, and how he was just so not able to do it with Padme to this tragic ending. The sun isn't setting and the episode fades away and you're like, Anakin, pay attention.
Yeah. You know, and you can feel it. You feel for Anakin of this person who's lost. He lost his mom, never had a dad, had a Qui-Gon dad for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Wants Obi-Wan to be his dad, but Obi-Wan kind of wants to be his brother. Kind of has his father figure from Sidious. And he wants to be reassured that people care about him, right? And there's that power in that Plo Koon says, she will come back to you, right? He doesn't say she will return safely to the Jedi. Mm-hmm. She will come back to you. And I think for us as viewers, that's got more emotional weight when you think of Anakin's trauma.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, any other thoughts before we take our quick break?
No. We can end on Yoda's smile as we go to a break.
Just like season 3 ended, we will take our break with Yoda's smile. We'll be back in a moment.
Hold up. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And we are back to finish our discussion of the final arc of season 3 of Clone Wars. The arc I think of is Ahsoka Come Home. It makes me sad, but I'm glad that Ahsoka came home. Let's talk about some of our favorite moments, Ken. There's a lot of action in these two episodes. What were some of your favorite action moments?
I'll start it right towards the beginning. It's funny because if you just watch this episode for the first time, you're like, wow, we're going to get a big battle of Felucia. And it's like, no, it's just this little prologue to what we're going to get here. But in there, there's some great action. And just what it's worth, Anakin slicing that strategy droid in half. I thought it was just, it popped for me. Just fuyong.
Yeah, those strategy droids are a pain in the ass. You could feel that in Anakin's slash. In that first battle, I loved when Plo Koon says, follow me, and then just jumps insanely high in the air. And then there's a beat where you're going to think like the clones are maybe like, what is he talking about? And then they jetpack off.
Love that.
It's so great. It's just so cool. Yeah, and then once we get into the moon, Ahsoka's big fight with Dar, you know, I really like that force move she uses a lot throughout these episodes, but you see it here first where she swipes the blaster to the left and the right.
Yeah, same.
It's just such a quick, powerful, nope, you shoot over there, you shoot over there. I love it.
And big same for me because it's one of those skills I'm like, tell more people to do that. That seems to be very effective. Do that.
Yeah, I mean, just it's great to take the blaster, but you can also just have them shoot willy-nilly.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe not entirely safe now that I hear myself say that. But Other moments for you?
I do love the design, which is based off an old G.I. Joe, actually Cobra vehicle, the hover pods. That's what the Trandoshan little hover pods are designed.
Yeah.
There. What wonderful deep cut. Somewhere Pablo Hidalgo is happy. But I love the designs, and then the Gatling guns. It's a real interesting violent weapon. Yes, I said violent weapon, but I just love every time they're used. It's aggressive. It's overwhelming when they're firing. So I just love the use of them and just kind of the visual of it.
Okay, yeah, just so you were into it when the hover pods were blasting away.
Yeah, just it's scary. It's frightening. It's really
scary. You can see why the younglings would lose hope.
Yeah, you know, when I say a violent weapon, it's just, you know, it's not an elegant lightsaber. It is just this, boom, all-encompassing laser blast just firing at you from one source, and it's a lot.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely great. In the second episode, once the younglings are really fighting and they're trying to take the ship, I love that moment where the Trandoshan's running at Jinx, and Jinx uses the Force to throw his other youngling friend, Omer, into the Trandoshan. Yes. And only really kind of halfway through the Force push is Omer like, oh, you're right, kick him.
Yeah.
At first, he's just flying. He's just a ragdoll.
Yeah. Sometimes falling feels like flying for a little while. I loved that. Yeah, there was a lot. And they had some, Omer and Jinx had some wonderful just flying kicks all through this second episode.
Flying kicks. Yeah. There's also a lot of great beats in the Wookiee fight, right? But when they first get to the flying hunting lodge, and Chewie just chucks the one Trandoshan over the edge, that's so satisfying. You know how much I love it when people fall from high places.
Well, then the Clone Wars is for you.
It really is, and it's even better when a lovable Wookiee throws someone from a high place, so yes. I love that.
Yes, it is. One of the other ones I love is Ahsoka. She force pushes the Trandoshan pilot through the window.
Love
that.
Oh, yeah. That is it. No messing around. Yeah. I think for me, final action beat is I really like Ahsoka and Garnak's fight. It's, you know, really intense, mm-hmm. and it really feels like it's, you know, kind of for all the marbles kind of thing. But I like that one moment where Garnak leans over and digs his claws into the ground to resist being force pushed.
Yes.
It's real scary.
Final couple moments for me. The crash of the transport was actually pretty cool. I'm not in the market for collecting favorite crash moments in Star Wars, but it also speaks to, I think, the quality and animation just already starting to improve leaps and bounds over some of the stuff in the early seasons. You know what I mean? It just was the sounds, the breaking apart of the ship, the detail, the same kind of detail they're starting to put into the backgrounds. They're really putting in the ships, I thought. And I was pulled into that moment, which led into the emergence of Chewie. Just one of his first early action moments of standing tall, howling, and then just an uppercut punch. Like, I want that Chewie figure.
Oh, yeah. That hero moment where he stops, mm-hmm. I believe it's Smug, from their knife hand going down and just grabs it. And like, yeah.
Yeah.
Big hero moment for Chewie. And Greed, the crash looks great. And because it looks great, you feel it even more.
Yeah, totally.
Let's talk about moments of comedy, whimsy, weirdness. There's a lot of fun and weirdness in these episodes. What grabbed you?
Well, it's funny. I actually put in that follow me Plo moment because it's totally could go any direction. It's a great action moment, which is the clones. The beat to me is like, here we go again, but we can do it. So I love that there. There was a great moment where, you know, the convoys here, the convies are floating around, those two and then eventually three. Right. And Khalifa and Ahsoka are talking early on and debating. And the convoys are literally just like looking, they're reacting to every word. It was a Disney musical moment. Like they were going to break into song or something. Like, we can get along the light side and the dark. I was fixated on them all through the second viewing of that episode.
Yeah, no, they're pretty great. I think that moon is obviously, it's a dark, dangerous, scary place for our heroes, but there's this little touch of like, it's nature. There's good things here too, right?
Yeah.
That was one of the moments that I almost wrote down as action, but I enjoyed it more as comedy when the I think convery plural, they're kind of just bouncing around like little Disney characters having fun, and that predator tries to eat them. Just grab its tail and drop it from the tree. Another drop from a high place, but a funny one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. It was like a Trandoshan monkey or something like that. It looked, yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely great. Early on, when Ahsoka has arrived there, and the younglings are filling her in on the absolute horror of their situation, mm-hmm. and then Jinx says, "Chew on that, Padawan." It just cracked me up. Of like, yeah, situation's really crappy. Chew on that, Padawan.
Yeah, love that. I think we also have an alert from a great new punk band called the Blasted Jedi Whelps. love that.
A lot of Blasted Jedi Whelps is great.
Jedi Whelps. A lot of that throughout the episode, and I was there for it.
Yeah, we talked about it at the very top, but my favorite moment of whimsy and weirdness is definitely the Trandoshan hooting.
Yes.
it's so primal. It's so great. It's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. One final one for me. It is violence. It is a death. But the last Trandoshan who is shot, there's this really comical beat of like, I think Chewie moved something. I can't remember. There's his cover is blown, and there's just this pause and a look, and he's just kind of like, and then he gets shot from a distance, and it just was this really awkwardly violent beat of like, is this? Oh, yep, there it goes. I'm dead.
No, this was one of the ones I wanted to share too, because it is action, but it's Omer, it's the youngling,
yeah,
shifting the pod with the Force, and that Trandoshan is still hunkered down like they've got cover, and he says, "What?" And then just get shot immediately before you can even process what has happened to him.
So there you go. Ken loves good violence comedy.
That was some great violence comedy and some just inventive action of different ways to use the Force. Of like, did you think you had cover? No, you don't. A couple more for me. There is a line from Garnak, the Trandoshan leader, who says, "So now the younglings are organized, bold, and they've got a Wookiee."
Yes.
Yes. It's funny just because, I don't know, the way that Wookiee is like really this like, oh, no, for everyone in the galaxy.
Yeah.
Like, you really cannot mess with them. But also like he's whining because the hunted prey might be able to fight back a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Very funny for me. And then there's a rare moment of just kind of some straight up physical comedy when they're going back to the ship to salvage parts. Chewie just slips and falls on his Wookiee butt.
Yes, he does, doesn't he now? Yes.
Yep. it's very realistic. And it's almost felt like to me, when I saw it, I was like, that's really funny. It's really interesting. It's almost like, well, I guess you could do that in live action. Mm-hmm. But it really felt appropriate for this. Final thing, actually, I love that in the credits, there's this nice message of Chewbacca as himself, which is, you know, a tradition in Star Wars credits, Jabba being credited as himself in Phantom Menace. And then it says, special thanks to Peter Mayhew for being the heart and soul of Chewbacca. Yes. It's great to see that and great to just kind of have this reminder of like, yeah, for when this was being made by the team that was making it, it was really special and cool that they were playing with Chewbacca.
Absolutely, indeed.
All right, let's move on to canon lore, connections to other stories, because there's kind of a lot going on. Just in Felucia, it was fun to see some actual Felucians, those little people.
Yeah.
And Anakin talked to them, and probably not, but wondering, like, do any of those Felucians know Anakin from that episode Bounty Hunters, where he trained them to fight?
That's right. Yeah, I assume they did. Hey, Annie's back.
And he's back. Probably not.
Yeah.
I wanted to take a moment to just kind of talk about Trandoshan culture, right? Mm-hmm. We spent some time with Bosk in the Clone Wars already. Bosk isn't here. He's off a bounty hunting. But we got this forest moon of Trandosha with islands that they use to hunt. It's part of their culture. We got the great throne room on the hunting lodge ship with the Wampa throne. All sorts of different trophy heads. I did not write them all down. I do like there's a Gungan. But what was your reaction to just kind of seeing these bits of Trandoshan culture?
It's, yeah, you want to speak on it carefully, right? I mean, this is what they got. This is what's been passed down. But it's really in your face. The Wookiee heads with the eyes removed and everything were kind of disturbing in their own way.
Terrifying.
Especially, yeah, especially with the ongoing feud. And so some of it is fun references, the Wampa Chair, Gungan, like you said, I mentioned the Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull reference. I'm always up for that. So, but yeah, it's, that's why I mentioned like the skier thing, from High Republic. And just, I have some sympathy and for anyone who might try to grow or emerge from that and what that means for Bosque and how you might've been on a path and there was, it's tough to move back from that. The Trend Oceans, beyond just being a cool character in Empire Strikes Back, it begs maybe a deeper look, and I'd love to see it explored somehow, some way. If you get like how we get a little bit more with the Tusken Raiders and Mando, I'm not saying that I need complete justice for this violent culture, but you know, like I'm fascinated by that. It's not just something that's in the background.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really like that there's a story in the Certain Point of View Empire Strikes Back book about Bosque that kind of gets into what's expected of him in the Trandoshan culture. And I really like that one. Because, because he was supposed to eat all of his siblings, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so great over the top. You mentioned it, the Trandoshan skiffs, or technically MSP-80 Pterotopter Hover Pod. being based on that G.I. Joe Cobra Thought Bubble flight pod. That's very, very cool. So I know that that is the actual inspiration. But when I saw them, they made me think of that mini rig that Kenner put out, the Cap 2 Captivator. And the reason I thought about it is because in all the pictures of it, it's got Bosque as the sample person who would fly this around. And it has a couple of those little arms hooking out in it. It has a similar vibe.
I think they could easily have drawn from all sources there. And I would have, as much as I love the reference to a Cobra vehicle there, I would have loved just seeing it be straight up that mini rig. It would have been equally as fun for me.
Straight up mini rig. Let's talk about Chewbacca. And in particular, what I want to talk about here, Ken, is there is a ton of just straight up John Williams Star Wars music in this Kevin Kiner scored episodes. But Chewbacca, he gets the full Force theme intro. How do you feel about that?
I had two distinct thoughts. Number one, right on, Chewie. You do kind of represent so many things in the light side. You absolutely deserve your place there. You've been this great support system for so many characters. You're there. You deserve that spotlight. And the other one was like, I still would like a Chewbacca theme. John, I think you've done your time. I get it. But come on, what are you doing? Just touring the Hollywood Bowl, making people happy? Give us a Chewie theme.
Yeah. Come on, John Williams. Yeah, Chewie deserves his own theme. It was powerful. It worked well. And I think for me, it encouraged me to be like, I kind of know it is the Force theme. But it is, you can think about it as the Song of Destiny or the Song of Light, right?
Yes.
And it's interesting then that, Chewie and Bail Organa can shake hands on both having a little Force theme intro. So there's precedent in Star Wars for it being the hero of old is back.
Yeah. And hope, right? Just hope.
Yeah. Hope.
Connect into that feeling. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. So it was a great reveal, for Chewie. I love that. Did you have back in the day when you first watched this, did you have any, they're going back to the classics too much?
I was trying to think about that. I was trying to think specifically this. They use him really well, and Chewie is such just one of those characters, and it was real novel at the time, right? Like, 2011, we're in that post-Revenge of the Sith world, and, even Chewie being in Revenge of the Sith, some people had some hot takes on.
Oh, yeah, knowing Yoda? Yeah.
And there again, too, we definitely, at some point, Han has said, there's no Jedi, and Chewie just said, there's nothing I can do to change his mind, whatever. And I'm okay with that.
This little green guy, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm okay. I like those kind of headcanon conversations. I like that Han might have seen some of the truth in front of him, and it took an entire lifetime to accept it, or a lot of his life. I'm okay with that. And so, therefore, I really do love Chewie's inclusion here. There's maybe other characters popping back in a lot of different Star Wars shows that I think had more, just resonated a little deeper with me than this one, but I just love Chewie so much, and it wasn't completely random. And also got us Tarful, and then we learned that Kashyyyk is close to this planet. I mean, there's a lot of little details, and it was a good use of it. Because at the time, again, with this was it, so to speak, right? Like, as a fan, you thought, cool, this might be the last time I see Chewie unless they use him again.
Right,
and
right.
There's yeah. power to that. There's power to it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think for me, like, I kind of like that Bossk wasn't in this episode because it seems like, you know, something different is going on with this group of Trandoshans. Not that Bossk wouldn't do this, but we know what he's doing. He's out bounty hunting, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. He's a little separated from this culture right now, doing his own thing. So I kind of like that Bossk isn't there, but I really like picking up on that thread of the Trandoshan Wookiee conflict.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there is a real power to Chewie coming back, not just because it's like, oh, I know him from before, right? And that's mm-hmm. the criticism, right? Of overplaying the nostalgia notes of right. you're supposed to be happy just because you saw something that you recognize. And for me, that is the test of like, does it go beyond that? And it absolutely does. Here's, you know, this character we care about, Ahsoka, in this horrific situation with these younglings. They've already paid the price of having one of them die because they're having some more hope and they're fighting yeah. back. And they need this boost, you know?
Yeah.
And Chewbacca is it because of the spirit of the character we know. And also just like everything in Star Wars from the first film is like, you do not mess with the Wookiee. Right. And it gives you, I remember feeling like, all right, well, now they can kick some Trandoshan lizard butt because Chewie's here, you know? And Chewie is here and a Wookiee is here. So it has like actual... Yeah. Stakes and meaning beyond just, I recognize that.
Yeah, no, it does. To represent hope, to represent some sort of comfort and represent safety. Yeah, there and in terms of just simple pro wrestling, it's the hot tag where the hero comes in to save the day and help at the end of the match. And I love that too.
Hot tagging Chewie. Yeah. Before you taught me that term, I would be disturbed to find out what it meant. But now I'm happy to know that Chewie got hot tagged.
Hot tagged into the match. A lot of cheering. A lot of, oh, here comes Chewie. He's got that uppercut.
He's got that uppercut. He will throw you all the way out of the ring. This is one that on the behind the scenes featurette for the second episode that Filoni discussed. But I was thrilled to see it of the bounty hunters from that episode. Bounty hunters on Felucia, Suji and Serapis, now no longer in his armor, are the ones that the Wookiees have hired to bring them to Waska in their ship Halo. Were you happy to see those characters again?
Yeah, absolutely. And then had not really thought of over the last decade or so of the reason they felt they needed to have some characters in there, and they chose wisely. But I loved hearing Filoni say, yeah, we had this great idea to bring the Wookiees in. Then we realized, well, how do they get off planet? We know they do, but do their wood ships have hyperdrives? Like, and even George, they had to go to George. Hey, man, what do you think? And weighing in on them needing to hire a space cab to get them there. I really love that detail. I really love it. And that's what we as Star Wars fans appreciate. And those are the questions we ask ourselves. And I think it worked. And to use that opportunity to bring in these two characters, Suki, specifically, I really enjoy. So good win for me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is more of that real like anthropological study of Star Wars that Lucas really likes and clearly teaches of like, you look at Revenge of the Sith and it's all wood. It's all insect. It's incredibly hard names to try to memorize of their ships. Yeah. I think the Overard jet catamaran and the Radon Nasp fluttercraft mm-hmm. just rolls off the tongue. Super easy to say and memorize.
Yeah.
But that was a cool rationale and very, very cool to see Suji and Serapis. And I did some digging on this because I really like their ship Halo. And to me, it's got some similarities to the Razor Crest. And I'm curious to see if anybody has like, if anyone in Lucasfilm has said, yeah, sure. They're related. Yeah. I did not find any evidence of that on Wikipedia yet. I think partially because some of that Mandalorian stuff is being like, let's leave room to dream and not lock everything down yet.
Yeah.
But looking up on Wikipedia, Halo is an SS-54 assault ship, while the Razor Crest is an ST-70 assault ship. So there's some model similarities.
Okay. I like that.
Good. I'm going to cling to that.
Cling it. Cling. Cling.
Yeah. Final thing for me in the canon lore connections, did verify this is the first appearance of the Convori, plural, or the Convor, singular. So mm-hmm. cool to see, even though it isn't the one.
Right.
That becomes attached to Ahsoka and possibly represents the daughter, but they're still the first time we see them associated with Ahsoka.
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, and that, yeah, I was at that thought, you know, I remember at one point it being tracked and being pretty clear. So good note that it starts here.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And moving on then to, was there anything that you disliked or questioned in this episode?
I think the only thing I disliked or questioned was within the story. Again, I'm looking at the reasons why these Jedi younglings were left there. I want to know some answers, Jedi. I want some reports. I want the context, and maybe I'll feel better about it at the end of the day, Jedi.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's always a thing to say. Ooh, could we have had a little more storytelling around the edges? Is always the thing that I end up reaching for. But
yeah.
No, I really like these episodes. I also kind of like that it's two episodes. It doesn't, you know, overstay its welcome. It's compact, and it's thrilling, and it gets a lot across about the big picture, as well as just being really interesting, really different episodes of the Clone Wars.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and that was the other thing too, of just like. Starting to watch these episodes and just having a natural like, oh, this is less epic. We just Citadel and Mortis and they're so different. They're so unique. That's part of what the Clone Wars is about, the series, the show. And you're so right. By this, the season one and two of the fan years, even Filoni himself is what he kind of refers to those years with he and Gilroy just, you know, geeking out that they get to do a Star Wars. Like now the show really knows what it wants to do. It has a lot of confidence and these episodes are tremendously confident.
Yeah, absolutely.
But not cocky.
Not cocky, with humility. Yeah. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on?
That Felucia is a wonderfully weird Star Wars planet, and I'd love to spend time there. Going back to playing it in some of the, was it Battlefront 2, the original Battlefront 2? I think you get a Felucia map, I think. It's the first time I really just love roaming around this weird, giant, supersized, glowing plant world. It's pretty fascinating and pretty fun. And it's just part of what the prequels bring to Star Wars, just going all over the place. You got a planet with giant plants and bugs and who knows what's on there and a lot of key things, good and bad, that the death of Aayla Secura, of course, pops to mind. I just love spending time there, and this was a short, but enjoyed seeing it.
Absolutely. I think Felucia will always kind of have a special place in my heart because, you know, growing up, the planets were different weather environments, right? and then that expands a lot in the prequels with, you know, Coruscant being a city planet, and especially by the time we get to in Naboo having lots of different environments.
Yeah.
But by the time we get to Revenge of the Sith and a bunch of different planets are needed and we get a sinkhole planet and we get Cato Nimodia with all their bridge cities, there's a great amount of expansion, but in my mind, Felucia is the first, like, I think we're out of weather environments. So this planet is giant plants. Yeah. Go.
Yeah, I agree with that. No, absolutely.
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful Felucia where lots of difficult things happen. All right, Ken, if you could have a figure of any character from this episode or any toy inspired by this episode, what do you want?
So figure-wise, I mentioned it, I do want uppercut action Chewie, like one of those old He-Man figures. Just wind him up and boom. Or even one of those old kind of early 90s wrestling figures, since we're talking wrestling. I would like wind him up, punch him Chewie as my choice of toy. But I do have a choice of just kind of overall memorabilia. But do you want to buy my Chewie figure?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Two. Well, one to take out and one to keep in the package, for sure.
The memorabilia I want. You might not follow me on this path, Joseph, because it's disturbing. Because I love these little cute little creatures. Convor, woo, cute, adorable, love it. Purposeful, perhaps even in the story. I would like some Convor E peeps because I'm a fan of peeps around Easter. Can we do that? Is that wrong? Are peeps themselves wrong? Hot takes on that too. But I enjoy peeps and I enjoy Convor, so I'd like to celebrate Easter by eating them.
Easter comes around and Ken eats more. Eh? I think that's great. I think that's lovely. I think they'd sell like hotcakes. For figures, I would love a throne room playset with the Wampa throne, all those disturbing heads that comes with a Garnak and an Ahsoka. Some little like the playsets used to have like little things to emulate. Like if you could put Garnak on a little peg and then hit a button and he goes flying out of the throne room playset.
Yes, that's great.
Basically, all of the toys that I want involve throwing Trandoshans, because the more conceptual game I'd like is if there was like a game called Trandoshan Toss and you had like a hoop, and then you had like some Trandoshans, and then you could put on like a Wookiee glove so you could pretend you're a Wookiee, and you just throw Trandoshans all day.
Yeah. Yeah. love it. Love it.
Our figures and our merch is all a little edgy today. Edgy.
Well, can you play the Trandoshan game in like the backyard? Can we make a lawn dart sized version?
Oh yeah, this is the family gathers around the 4th of July.
Oh, perfect.
Throws Trandoshans.
Love it. Love it.
It brings people together. Anyway, next up, we are moving into season 4 of the Clone Wars. We are into the Water War. The first episode is Water Wars, season 4, episode 2, Gungan Attack, season 4, episode 3, Prisoners. Really looking forward to diving into those. Ken, what do you think the moral of this episode of our podcast should be?
Well, first of all, we're coming up on some challenges for old Kenny in the Clone Wars. So, we'll see where I cannot wait. I have not touched those episodes yet. I cannot wait for old, what's his name? Riff Tamson.
Riff Tamson is knocking on your door. That's right.
He is. So get ready for that. The moral of this episode, a moral of our podcast for this episode should be, when you are overwhelmed by the amounts of content you must produce, lean on who you are as a Star Wars pundit, and it will get you through.
Oh, that is really, really great. I understand what you're saying, and it's a very healthy and a happy moral. So on that note, do you want to let people know where they can find us?
Absolutely. We are the Force Center Podcast on the Force Center Podcast feed. You can follow us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. You can also find us on Instagram and YouTube. And we are on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. Like us there. You can get an audiobook on us by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center. And you can also get merch. Someone just picked up a Speculate Responsibly t-shirt the other day. You can do that by going to tpublic.com/user/Force Center. You can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. That'll get you into our Discord for a daily conversation with a wonderful celebratory group of Star Wars fans. You can follow us, listen to us on many podcast forums. I was listening to Grace, my fiance, complaining about Apple Podcasts the other day. That is still the most popular one, but rife with problems right now with some updates they've been trying to put in. So if you're feeling frustrated by that old method, we are on all spots, including Amazon Music, Spotify, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, and more. You can follow me at Catnapsock or go to my website, catnapsock.com, for more information. I am in New York doing comedy as we speak, pre-taped episode, but coming up soon, I got dates in San Francisco and Washington, D.C. Joseph, what about you?
Excellent. All exciting stuff. You can find me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. And you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all my other comedy adventures, comedy albums, my other podcast, Obsessed, all kinds of stuff there on josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Uppercut Chewbacca, this has been the Clone Wars Report.
Yeah.